Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real feel-good radio.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the award-winning Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcast, and also the world's number one radio talk show on homeopathy. Woohoo! I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla. Welcome, everyone.
Well, it's an absolute delight, is it not, ladies and gentlemen, for Nyla and I to be in your splendid company. How wonderful indeed. So the world of homeopathy is growing, is it not? Expanding and reaching the corners of the earth. What a fantastic time it is for modalities and homeopathy in all modes of healing. Now, did you know, ladies and gentlemen, that Nyla and I are also the co-founders of Homeopathy in Practice? And this is an online educational platform providing masterclasses and webinars to homeopaths, to students, and basically anyone, to be honest, interested in this blessed system of healing. From homeopathic therapeutics, homeopathy for gynecology, matridonal remedies, German new medicine, the list goes on, does it not, Nyla?
Absolutely. And with a Facebook following of over 37K, actually, we are fortunate to help so many in their deeper understanding of homeopathy and associated modalities. Do visit us at homeopathyinpractice.co.uk to find out more. And now, on to today's episode, we are deeply honored to welcome a guest whose work has profoundly influenced the understanding of maternal and infant health within modern homeopathy, Patricia Heatherly. Patricia is an internationally respected homeopath, educator, author, lactation consultant, and pioneering researcher of the LAC remedies. For decades, her work has illuminated the deep connection between nourishment, attachment, development, and healing, helping practitioners around the world better understand the emotional and physiological foundations of human health. She is the author of the highly acclaimed books, The Homeopathic Physician's Guide to Lactation and The LACs, A Materia Medica and Repertory. If you have not used it, I think you're missing out. Landmark works that have become essential references for homeopaths exploring breastfeeding, early development, and the profound themes embodied within the milk remedies.
Now, through her teaching, research, provings, and clinical practice, Patricia has brought extraordinary depth to themes of bonding, to nurture, identity, separation, and the primal human need to belong. Her work reminds us that healing often begins in the earliest moments in life, in the experience of safety, of connection, nourishment, and love.
In this episode of the Homeopathy Health Show, we explore Patricia's remarkable journey into homeopathy, the inspiration behind her pioneering work with the LAC remedies, and the evolving challenges facing mothers, babies, and families in the modern world. We'll discuss breastfeeding, attachment, physiological nurturing, developmental health, trauma, emotional regulation, and the deeper meaning of what it truly means to be nourished physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Patricia, it is an absolute privilege and pleasure to welcome you to the Homeopathy Health Show.
Welcome.
Thank you, Nyla.
It's so wonderful to have you, and we're really, really excited. And we have questions, but we actually don't have questions because we're just going to have a conversation, are we not?
It's true.
But it's just wonderful how We talk to practitioners around the world, we talk to students around the world, and we are involved with many schools and events, and the lac remedies have become so instrumental in healing. It's just beautiful. Go back maybe even, let's just go back even a decade. The differences that we see now and how homeopathy has evolved and how these magical, I say magical, but these homeopathically magical substances can have such a deep impact. But hey, before we do that, we need to go to Patricia, don't we, and ask her how she is and her background, Nyla. Go on. I digressed,
I
don't
know
I?
these remedies, this theme of milk is so profound. It just hits someone at some place. So we just keep on thinking and talking because it is actually physically, emotionally, and spiritually nurturing milk. But Patricia, we want to know, how did you find out about the magical and healing powers of milk, and how did you find homeopathy?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've always been interested in breastfeeding, even as a really little girl. I'm the eldest of six girls, and my mother was not a breastfeeder. My mother and my father's wife, Margaret, had daughters 2 weeks apart, and they shared a house. And my cousin Susan and I, grew up together. And my mother was a very strict, Dr. Spock, every 4 hours, I could have a feed. And I was a very unhappy baby. And Auntie Margaret would take pity on me, and she would feed me. And so she got lots of stimulation and made lots of milk. And she was a very successful breastfeeder, whereas my mother wasn't. And I didn't find that out for a long time. But even as a really little girl, I would breastfeed my dolls or my teddy bears. And I still remember one evening, and I was in bed, and I was sitting up and breastfeeding my teddy bear, and my mum and dad stuck their head around the corner, in that really sweet sort of, isn't that cute, laughing at me. And I went, oh. But if we went somewhere and there was an aunt or somebody feeding, I'd say, oh, show me your milk. Like, I was really bad. And I was just into mothering. I mean, my fifth sister was born when I was 7, and I used to get up at dawn and change her nappy and give her bottle so mum could sleep. And then when she had the next baby, I was 14, and we were in a two-story house. I would sleep downstairs near the crib, and I would give the 2 a.m. bottle. Then I would go up to bed and let mum have a rest. And I was babysitting for money by the time I was 11. I was a very safe pair of hands when it came to mothering. So it was just my thing. I don't know where it came from, but I've just always loved babies. I wanted to have six of them myself. That didn't work out for lots of reasons. We lived in inland Australia, and I had a husband who was never home, and no family around. So I just had three. But I fed my first baby till the week he walked at 13 months, and then he spat me out, said, "Bye, Mum." And my next child, a girl, I fed for 2.25 years, and I weaned her because I had a galactoseal that needed surgery, and then I breastfed my next one for 3 years. But knowing what I know now, I probably would have fed longer because, anthropologists tell us that primates lactate for 6 times the gestation rate, and mine didn't get enough of it, but they got a fair bit. I remind them of that when I say, "Can I have a lick of your ice cream?" And they go, "No." And I say, "But I always gave you milk when you wanted
That's a really nice one.
it." So, yeah, no, I just that was just my thing. And then where did I find homeopathy? Well, I grew up in a very Western medical family. My father was a professor of chemistry at the local university, and his brothers were all doctors and dentists. And, our family in Newcastle, were medical people, and I didn't know anything about any alternative medicine. And living in Mount Isa, when I had my second child, I had a sudden detached retina in this eye. I went slowly blind over a week. And my husband was away, of course. So I packed up my 2-year-old and my baby, and I flew to Brisbane. And my neighbour met me and took me to a specialist. And I was put straight in hospital. And back then, they tipped me upside down and took my eye out. It was a six-hour operation, and they glued and clipped the retina back in. And I had to then, I can remember coming out of recovery at midnight. And they said, "We've got your baby here, Mrs. Hatherley. Just lie there." And I plugged my baby on. Then I had to lie on my right side for 3 days and not move my head. And they brought my baby every 3 hours for me to feed her. And so after that, I thought, I've got to, it was a low point in my life, of course. So I got interested, I think, in natural medicine then, naturopathy. I used to, take supplements and diet and all of that. And then when we moved to Brisbane, we heard of a man who'd studied medicine and he was a practicing homeopathy. And I thought, oh, we started going to him with the children, and he, of course, did miracles. And I was very fortunate to get a morning job with him. I used to go in, and between 7 and 9, I would answer the phone and do the filing and make up remedies. And it was my first introduction. And I thought, I think I'll look more into this. And so I went to the local college, and it was like coming home. I mean, it was just such an amazing experience for me. And I just loved the study, just loved the study. And I've been very fortunate because I'm actually a teacher by profession. That's my first degree. And as soon as I was finished, all the colleges around were on to me to teach because of my qualification. So I've taught materia medica. And of course, to teach something is to learn it twice. And that's been my thing. And then, of course, when the LACs arrived, that was the subject I had to teach. And from that's when the book arose. I put so much work into that. And I wrote the book over 5 years in my spare time.
Oh,
So.
I'm getting goosebumps when you're talking about this, because it's like the path was paved for you to do this. You born with the love of milk and nourishment, and then this has led you to the right place, to right people, because world had to listen to this. We needed to read this because healing comes from there. Oh, so exciting, so beautiful. I'm visualizing your journey when you were talking about it, and this is such an in 5 minutes you cannot put it all together. But going through that process must have been a tremendous experience for you, life changing, I assume.
It was. And I mean, and of course, being a mother, you learn just so much. And I was very involved in the breastfeeding movement in Australia, in that was called Nursing Mothers, and I ran a group, and I trained to be a counsellor. And but I was always very interested in the biology and the physiology and that side of things. And the qualification of lactation consultant emerged in America, and then the first year it was available in Australia, I sat the exam. So I was actually the first ever lactation consultant who became a homeopath who had that sort of double qualification. And that was an interesting thing because there was no formal study. I mean, it was 2 days of exams, and we were told that we could be asked questions on anything to do with lactation that appeared in the literature up till 3 months before the exam. So it was a self-directed learning, and we were in a group and we helped each other study. It was a huge thing to do. I was accredited for 20 years. I'm no longer accredited, but I still keep up my SERPs because I'm really interested in, just the other day I listened to somebody who's just done a PhD on oxytocin, and I thought, no, I've got to listen to that. And it was very enlightening, of course. But it's just it's a lifelong commitment. And I was thinking of writing a book, and my cousin Susan, who I mentioned before, she died suddenly at the age of 51, and I went to her funeral, and I thought, oh gosh, if I'm going to be doing stuff, I better get on and do it. So I came back from the funeral that day, and I sat down and I started to write my first book, and that's where that began. So I was 51.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Wonderful.
Amazing.
You know, what's really, really beautiful is when we look at destinies and how I'm just fascinated by that, you know, how you were looking after your siblings, nurturing, looking after the well-being of your mother, and how that naturally has progressed into where you are today. It's such a beautiful journey, isn't it? Nothing happens by chance, you know.
It's true.
And it's just wonderful that you were able to mold into that. It was almost like the gentle walnut type push was given to you to go to this trajectory. You know, it's really, thank you for sharing. That's very inspiring, I have to say. But we do want to talk about oxytocin, and wow, that must have been one phenomenal PhD on oxytocin. But hey, let's talk about that.
If you can share your experience around it, because it's talked a lot nowadays. It's not in news. Even the youngsters, they say oxytocin, talk about it. I would love to know more about your experience around it.
Well, I was a great devotee follower of the work of Michel Odant. Do you both know who he was? He was a French surgeon who got sick of doing cesarean sections, so he became an obstetrician. And he, in the 80s, ran a centre in France, at Petivier, where women would come from all around the world to birth with him, because he had a very midwife-centred form of care. And he wrote a lot of books, I think 20 of them, actually. He only died last year in his 90s. And he came to Australia a lot, and I always go, this is him, say, oxytocin is the hormone of love. it was just that thing. And I just knew how important it was. And when I saw the oxytocin molecule written down, it's in the shape of a small snake. And I went, my goodness me. I mean, every culture on the planet has a creation myth that's got a snake in it. Why is that? Our DNA is serpentine. I mean, you know, in the cosmos, you will just see galaxies in a serpentine. It's a permeating thing about creation, oxytocin. It is the driving force. I think it is source. I really do think that that's what oxytocin is. And it's what shapes us. And it really, really worries me about what's been happening. And nobody talks about it. But in the last, 40 years or so, there's been a movement away from natural conception and natural birth and natural nurture. I mean, in Australia now, 1 in 18 babies is conceived in a petri dish. I know in England, the NHS recently said that more than 50% of women in England are having cesareans. 1% of women in England are still breastfeeding at 6 months. It's only 15% here in Australia. It used to be 30 when I was breastfeeding. So if babies are being conceived and birthed and nurtured not in an oxytocin milieu, Michel Odant has made the point that their receptors are not being primed and they're on the spectrum. And this is the real root cause of what's going on. I know vaccines can tip you over the edge, but I've written about this in Links, but I really think that Hahnemann only named three miasms because we've got three metabolic pathways. And we know that oxytocin moderates the pathway of homeostasis. And of course, it's the offset for the corticosteroids, which is psychosis, anabolism, and catabolism, I think, is driven by insulin. So I think that, you know, we look at miasms in a very negative way for prescribing, and I understand that. But I mean, when you look at SORA, you know, it's about deficit, it's about lack, it's about the itch. But on the other aspect, you know, it's about ebullience and it's about resilience. And I can remember being at a concert with Leonard Cohen, and he sang that amazing song, Anthem. And, you know, he said, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And I went, oh, that's what SORA is. We're flawed so that we can become perfect. And it is all to do with oxytocin, and it's all to do with being conceived well and birthed well and having those first 4 years with the mother. And if you follow the work of Erik Erikson, you know, he says that in those first 4 years you can trust or distrust, or you can be autonomous or be full of guilt. And, you know, depending on which rung you're on, it really impacts on the path through life. But lac humanum at any time in that pathway will reverse that. It is the most important medicine that we do have. And I'm using it more and more now in an 8C, in a Fibonacci, if I can get it, you know, 3 and 5 and 8. Because 8 is such, well, let's go back to the snake. I mean, the Ouroboros, you know, is one of the cultural, it came from the Phoenicians. And, you know, it's the infinity sign. But when you put it upright, it's the Merkaba, it's the light body. I mean, Sankaran, Michaela Keir, Scholten, Smits, they've all worked with the number 8. Why is that? 8's such a sacred number, and it's full of the potential. Oxytocin, you know, look at the gematria of oxytocin and lac humanum, 8 is there. So, you know, this is a little bit out there, I get that, but that's kind of where I'm going now. It isn't just about facts and symptoms. It is a bit more spiritual. And humanity, I think, has got to get its act together because we could be at extinction point if we don't get this right. It worries me.
That's fascinating. You have sent me on a travel journey, because oxytocin is also given when to induce the labor.
Well, that's pitocin. It's not really oxytocin. It's artificial. And the remedy that we have is artificial homeopathy, and I do not touch it. I mean, if you want oxytocin, you give lac humanum under 12C. It's rich in oxytocin. And you know, and with people who are damaged from, you know, what went on the last 5 years, I mean, for people who are kind of knocked out of their body by being shed on, I'm giving them lac maternum to bring them back into their body, and then following it with lac humanum low to reset the innate immune system, because that's what human milk does. It moderates the development of the innate immune system. And so, you know, you've got to think of the lacs as sarcodes. They're sarcodes. You know, you can give them high, but more often than not, I will use lac humanum low.
It's quite interesting what you've said there, because we actually did want to touch upon the difference between lac maternum and lac humanum. Lac humanum seems to be the oft repeated or oft used. Lac maternum, not so much, but there's a strong correlation. But please do help us with the differential here.
Well, that's interesting, because when I was a student, And I was a lactation consultant, you know, I kind of had this, and we didn't have lac humanum as a remedy. And I said to my friend Debbie in class, who was breastfeeding, I said, let's make a remedy out of your milk. And we did. We made a 6C of lac humanum. And then, of course, I heard afterwards that, of course, there'd been the proving in England. And I went, oh, there is a remedy made from human milk. That's interesting. And I didn't do much with it, you know, because I didn't understand the whole proving till I got hold of it. But then Tinnis wrote this article in Links where he said that Lacmaternum was a better remedy than Lacumanum because it was more universal and it was made from the milk of all these 9 women from day 3 to 9 months. And I thought, nah, it can't be the same because it's going to have colostrum in it and it's probably going to have involuting milk in it. Because when women are starting to wean, their milk goes back to being like colostrum. And I did ask Dennis, you know, was that those women at 8 and 9 months, I said, were they in the process of weaning? And he didn't know. I went, oh, that's not good as a researcher. But I asked him if I could do the proving. And we actually met in the Himalaya. I went over trekking and he was there to do a weekend seminar, which I went to, and he gave me the potencies and I brought them back and I did the proving. And I published it. And it is, there are a lot of rubrics in Lacmaternum that are the same in Lacumanum. And you can look up the proving. It's on my website. And, you know, they're just the common ones. But the big thing is it's about, as Tinnis said, it's about incarnation. It's about not being in the body. Whereas Lacumanum is about development of the self and the ego. It's very different. And the dreams that came out in Lacmaternum were disgusting, cadavers and intestines emptied out. This is a revulsion.
Mm.
And I'm firmly of the belief that all of this gender dysphoria is linked back to birth trauma, where you've got the vital force coming in there. Just look at this situation where there's been so many drugs and they've gone, nah. And I think a lot of those people are just still kind of stuck in their consciousness in their last life and not really fully embracing. And I've used Lacmaternum with them to bring them into this body. Mm. They are very different. And the thing is with the lax, you know, you can give the milk of the dog or the donkey or the lion or whatever it is, because that's where people are at. But if you're working with them, they have to come back to Lacumanum or Lacmaternum to come back into the community of man. And then you have done proper healing with them.
Mm.
And it could either be one or the other. Lacmaternum if there's been birth trauma. Lacumanum if there's been no nurturing at the breast. Mm. That's the big etiology for it. Ailments from insufficient breastfeeding, that's the etiology. Mm. Whereas Lacmaternum, it's ailments from birth trauma.
Hmm.
And you only can give it once because Lacmaternum is colostrum, pardon me, is only there for 3 days. It's the initial gift of the mother. You get it once and then that's it. And if you can't retrieve the situation, it's not retrievable. But having said all that, since COVID, I am repeating it.
Hmm.
I am repeating it because we're in a whole new scenario now. And we're so affected by shedding that it's hard for us to be in our bodies in lots of ways. Yeah.
Does that mean that, is there any link then to, because you mentioned that breastfeeding is on the decline, bottles are increasing. So as far as Lacmaternum is concerned and the element of colostrum and the building blocks and the growth factors and the antibodies and whatnot, how important that is? For children not just developing as a result of the trauma but getting past it, but also for their nutritional, for want of a better word, the allergies, the, you know, children are growing up in, they're growing up allergic rather than, the, you know, they're born allergic, should I say, rather than going into allergies. So is there a link there between Lacmaternum as well?
There is a link, and there's a lot of research coming out now about the microbiome and the role that the breast plays in developing that. You'd be surprised to know that there are hundreds of different bacteria in milk. And, of course, with a physiologic birth and the baby comes down the birth canal onto the perineum and then onto the mother's abdomen, it's being inoculated with all the bacteria that she has that's familial. That's really important to go down and to really kick off this microbiome. And then in human milk, and this is unique to human milk, there are 200 special sugars called oligosaccharides, and their only role is to feed the bacteria in the gut. And if that's not happening, there's a whole different pathway it develops. And that's when you're getting the autoimmune and the allergy, if that has not happened. And there's no way you can fix that. You can't go back. It's so important in those early days and weeks that nothing but mother's milk goes into that baby.
Wow.
Amazing, isn't it? How little we actually know. How these processes where people can very easily say, okay, let's go straight to bottle because of whatever reason, preferences.
We're very cavalier. I mean, we are what's called altricial mammals as opposed to precocious mammals, like a little lamb or maybe elephant, when, you know, they can stand up and walk and find, whereas a human baby is quite helpless. Only 20% of its brain is developed. And even by 1 year, only 80% of the brain is developed. And that being in touch with the mother over that first 6 to 8 weeks forms the amygdala. And if that's not happening in her arms, that goes haywire as well. I mean, today I had to wait at the bank for 40 minutes to get served. And there was a family also in the bank, and there was a little girl, and she spent the whole time stimming. I just looked at her and I thought, this child's in torture. What has happened to her in her development? I was asking myself, thinking torrentially. We are so mucking about with our babies and thinking that you have to give them a shot in the arm to make them healthy, and you have to give them now RSV vaccine to make them. I mean, human milk has got secretory IgA in it, which in milk is 5 times more than it is in serum, and it completely protects the mucosa. I mean, epidemiological studies show that breastfed babies are not at risk for any virus. You know, it's just crazy what's going on. You know, it's all to do with this. But anyway.
I have always been very pro breastfeeding. I have 4 kids and I've breastfed them, all of them, and it was exclusively breastfed. And in our culture as well, back in Pakistan, they are also thinking that breastfeeding is something old-fashioned and shouldn't be doing, and women have to be different. They need to, like, this separation.
Going back
between,
to work.
Yeah. The separation between the child and the mother is seen as a modern and educated decision. And I remember one of my aunts, she made fun of me. Oh, what are you doing with your daughter always in a room separate and breastfeeding? Why, just get yourself a bottle. And I said, you do yours, I do mine. I love breastfeeding my children. And I stayed with it. I breastfed all 4 of them. And I'm so passionate. If someone doesn't do it, it's like the most easiest thing to do. If you can get into a breastfeeding, it was really a difficult.
And it's nobody's business, Nyla. Yes, I mean, I say to mothers, what happens between you and your baby is as private and personal as what happens between you and your spouse. What goes on between the sheets or in the privacy of your bedroom is nobody's business. Nobody should be even commenting.
Yeah.
And I mean, this, you mentioned attachment as we were, you know, opening up this conversation. And I mean, you go back to after the Second World War and the work done by Bowlby and Ainsworth on attachment theory. Mm. I mean, it was incontrovertible that, you know, the baby and the mother are an item. And Nils Bergman says that they are a biological, you know, social entity. You know, the baby should not be separated from the mother. Now, I don't know whether you know of the work of Harlow that was done in the 60s. He was a researcher with monkeys, and they took monkeys away from their mothers and put them in cages with these wire facsimiles and put bottles of milk, and some of them had fur, some of them, those monkeys were so traumatized that they couldn't reproduce, and they had to be raped in order to be reproduced. And they're still working with those monkeys, and they still cannot mother. You know, that trauma is so transgenerational. You know, the sins of the father shall visit ye for 3 generations. And we know from research now, in the microRNA that's in human fluids, all of that stuff's passed down, transgenerational. And this thing, the mother, is so important.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So important. I'm just getting goosebumps throughout this session because it's hitting somewhere, which is very, very important. As a mother, I can also feel how important the nurture is, taking them into my arm. It was not recommended here, but I co-slept with them. I used to have them in my arm and I slept with them, and that was the best time of my life. I have to say, really enjoyed it.
And they most babies of the world sleep with their mothers. I mean, if a family goes to the hardware store in Japan to get a new bed, they say, how many children are there?
Mm.
That defines the size of the bed that they get.
And now you touched upon the autism and ADHD. That's increasing massively. Kids are not, as the example that you have given, very fidgety. They're all over. The stimming behavior is increasing, even if they are not on the scale of spectrum. But still, you will see some type of restlessness and all the fidget toys that are out in the market. How can we help our patients? How can we help our world now?
Well, lacumana will probably be the main remedy that will finish that off. I mean, you'll start with whatever, tarantula or stramonium or hyoscyamus. Or, I mean, there is actually a case. I don't know whether you know about my newsletter, The Milk Mother Matters. I did it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the last issue was a case of autism that mm-hmm. I cured over 3 years. And it was lacumana in the end that just finished her off. And then she went to normal school. Mm-hmm. And the pediatrician said, oh, misdiagnosis. Whereas when she came to me at three, she was in nappies. She couldn't talk. But there was birth trauma and there was lack of breastfeeding. And, you know, that is the main thing. It is the not getting that connection with the mother and not getting the milk of the species, I think, are the two main things that are underpinning this. But then, of course, the inoculations, especially what they're getting now, is just finishing that off. And the really scary stuff is that Hannah has shown that, you know, within 1 hour of a COVID vaccine, it's in the milk.
Mm.
And that's another new space that we're still exploring, and we don't know what to do about it. And what's the best advice? And it's very sad.
It is, isn't it? It's it absolutely is. But staying on this theme of lacumanum and maternum, and you've mentioned the Fibonacci sequence as well. Do you find that with these lac remedies, there is I know I shouldn't ask, but is there an ideal potency, or does it really depend purely upon?
Well, with like maternum, my favorite is 200C. I give 200C 3 times a day for 3 days, and that's it.
Mm.
Like humanum, I'll give all potencies, just depending, you know, if it's a big psychological kind of scenario, you know, you'll give a 1M or whatever. Same with the others, you know, I'll give 1Ms, 200s, 30s. I don't have a set potency. It really is. Well, I can remember one of my teachers saying you choose the potency that reflects the energy of the case. So I think you just have to go with that.
Wonderful.
You mentioned lacumanum under 12C, 8C. is something that you are like.
Or LMs. LMs. I used a lot of LMs. Yeah.
LMs work profoundly. They're beautiful legs, aren't they?
I'm also using LMs in, especially in chronic cases where I feel like they need something to take care of them every day.
Just go up slowly. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful that what we have in our toolbox, actually. Mm-hmm. Just have to go and grab it. So you thinking, just trying to figure out how you work. So you would go with the lacmaternum, lacumanum first and then go with their remedies, or how would you go with that?
Just depends what it is, you know. Okay. If somebody comes in and they're a lac acinum or a lacuna, you know, you give them that, and you will find that they will eventually come to lacumanum. Possibly Rustox and then lacumanum. You know, as Tinnis said, Rustox is connected to lacmaternum, and that's true. I agree with him. Yeah. And everyone's different. I really don't have any rules. You just have to go by the totality of the symptoms. But know that true cure will come only when they've come back to the community of man.
That's a wonderful, wonderful way of looking at it, actually. And it's actually very true as well. Be fluid and be at peace with what you have prescribed, right? It's so, so important nowadays, because we find even with the lax and even matridona remedies, and students can become quite overwhelmed. Oh my God, this question of potency will always be there, right, till the end of time. Oh my God, did I do it right? Was it an 8C? Was it Fibonacci? Was it 200? Did I go too high with the 1M? Oh my God, it's what's going on? But it depends, isn't it? You have to gauge, and those things, of course, take time. It's a natural process, isn't it, of adulthood in homeopathy?
Well, it's to do with growth as a practitioner, too. I can remember one of my teachers saying, you must know your materia medica, and you must know your philosophy, and you must know yourself. And that's when I thought, that's when I started to get into the Reiki. And, you know, and I've since become a Reiki master. And, I mean, I can be in a consultation and it's almost like my higher self talks to her higher self and tells me what to give them and what potency, so that, you know, you can't poo-poo any of that. I mean, there is that an energy on all sorts of levels, and experience, you know, of course, with experience. And when you're a student, you do flounder. You know, I can remember giving, because I was scared, giving someone APIS 6C after a bee sting and wondering why I never did anything. That's when my teacher said, Patricia, you can't throw out a douse of fire with a thimble full of water. I thought, oh, yes, that's true. So you learn from your mistakes, and, you know, we all make them.
We learn more from our mistakes, actually. With me, myself, it is, if I have done a mistake, I will learn a life lesson from that. And that stays with us. Like just what you mentioned, APIS 6C. You're never going to forget these things when your teacher have said something. Yeah,
that's right. Take the learning and move on.
Take the learning. So now you've mentioned other lac remedies. Like I said, how do you like lacinum and like equinum? The pictures are similar. How will our practitioners differentiate them? If you have anything that you can tell them, okay, look here, this is the way to differentiate these remedies.
Well, I mean, like acinum is full of barium. It's a milk that's full of barium. So it's very baryocarb in its energy and its mental kind of focus. And it's on that gold line. It is the jester in the court of the king. It carries the king. The donkey carried the king traditionally, especially in the Christian tradition. You look at Mary and Bethlehem, the flight into Egypt, you know, coming in on Palm Sunday, all of that was all done with the donkey. So there is that whole energy there. Whereas like equinum, it's like Sisyphus, you know, you just work hard, don't get anywhere, go round and round. And I think that's got a lot to do with the horse being a broken spirit animal. You have to break a horse. You can't break a donkey. I mean, if people here on as students, I mean, if you go onto my website and go to where my books are, with my lax book, there's a second edition came out last year, and I actually recorded two webinars of the lax. I put them in two editions. And they're a good thumbnail experience for people to have a look at. It will really help differentiate. Yeah.
We'll actually put the link with.
Yeah, you can have a look at them and share that. That's fine. It's in the public domain.
And the newsletter that you mentioned, where you mentioned the case, is it also available?
It's on my website too. People can go and look it up. And a lot of videos. The last couple of years, I've done a lot of teaching, and the videos are all free. They're all on my website, all on lactation. I did a whole series called Lactation 101 in 2023. I did it for 9 months, and that's all about the basics of lactation.
I like the title.
Lactation 101,
yeah. Yeah, it's like Remedy Room 101 or Room 101. I like that. That's very 501, isn't it?
Oh, I'll definitely link your website in the comments. Just looking at it, and so much information out there. So the generosity of homeopaths with their knowledge is immense. Like the love of spreading, the love of giving is there. I can see the nurturing side of you as well here. And now,
which actually takes us, Naila, what you've just said, takes us very nicely into something that we wanted to share with you for our listeners as well. So on behalf of the listeners and UK Health Radio Network, and of course ourselves here at the Homeopathy Health Show, it's a perfect time, I think, just to say, Patricia Hatherley, thank you so very much for everything that you do and that you will continue to do, because you have changed thousands and thousands of lives around the world because of your teachings, because of how wonderful you are and the knowledge sharing and the books. And so we give you and show you the utmost respect for that. Thank you so much for everything that you do.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. It's actually a treasure to have people like you in homeopathy who, like, things that you are talking about, I don't think many people have ever thought about the connection between the milk and lactation and the growing population. The thread that connects all of them, which when that's broken, the generations are broken.
Hey, Patricia, you won't believe it, but we haven't stopped, but we are at the end of part one of this episode. So we're just going to continue the conversation, ladies and gentlemen. But for the purposes of course, the podcast, we're just going to end here for part one and look out for part two next week, which is truly just a continuation. So we'll talk to you very, very soon indeed. I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.